It is our duty to learn as much about the world as loyal citizens of Guyana. Remember, the evaluation of each person on Tuesday in the People's Forum. So let's catch up with everything from Sunday last, some of the things you've heard, the nations particularly, the Rosenbergs, some of the people who have given themselves with commitment and duty far, far beyond what non-socialists could understand as the beauty and call of duty. Today's news. The Constitution is now being formulated. Different groups are gathering throughout Guyana to study every sector of constitutional amendments, constitutional freedoms and liberties, to ensure that the referendum which brought about a new constitution under socialism will fulfill its goals, said the Guyana Broadcasting Studios. The news today said that the referendum was vastly supported in spite of all opposition groups calling for a boycott, which the opposition groups declared they would assure by photography, which is a form of harassment, to follow up those who opposed the decision of opposition parties in Guyana to not go to the election on the referendum. The government said it had very little effect, except in the region where Dr. Chetty Jagan was born, where there was only a 38% turnout, but still a majority vote, though slight, for the referendum. The mirror, said Guyana Broadcasting Studios, showed a voting booth where there were no people present in line, which was during the rain and not during the election hours. It was the only photograph shown of the election process by the opposition. The government pointed out, if indeed there was fear of rigging, the PNC stated, why did the opposition not have watch people at the polls rather than sitting off in cars taking photography to be used later as intimidation against those who might go to the polls to vote on the question of the referendum. As you know, the government has claimed an overwhelming victory. Apparently, the socialist promises of the new constitution are beginning to be implemented. The medical superintendent, Dr. Chin, of Georgetown General Hospitals, said that there had been a severe crisis brought about in Guyana due to the practice of capitalistic medicine showing lack of empathy for the general welfare of people, that people could buy themselves appointments and the working class not having the funds of the bureaucracy of business or the bourgeoisie could buy an appointment anytime they wished. The medical superintendent further stated that the situation will be alleviated by even more Cuban doctors coming than had originally been planned. In spite of what Guyana Broadcasting Studios calls great opposition, apparently from USA, to having Cuban advisors and medical experts in this country, Guyana is going full speed ahead under the socialist PNC, the ruling party, the People's National Congress, to bring in cosmetic surgery, facial surgeons, pathologists, two more anesthesiists, and a consultant, apparently with some degree of knowledge of endocrinology. They praised the Cuban people and government for being of great help to the Guyanese in this hour of need in what the Guyana Broadcasting Network called the transition to pure socialism. Many of the new doctors will be appointed to the rural medical services, which apparently will include one even in the Northwest region. Although that was not one of the major priorities, did not mention if Jonestown's medical resources were responsible for that. We wouldn't expect such praise, but it is a good feeling to note that yesterday alone we saved an eye of a neighbor, one of our beautiful Guyanese neighbors in Port Kaituma. We saved a mother and her baby that's now living in the community, recuperating. The baby and she are doing fine. But she was in traumatic shock, total shock, required intravenous and the best medical care which we have, or she would have passed. Guyana Broadcasting Studios, which reflects the policies of the People's National Congress, which is the party of Prime Minister Burnham, our leader, has called for support of the Korea Reunification Symposium meeting tonight in Georgetown. The USA has a firm policy against the reunification of North and South Korea, as South Korea, under the dictatorship that was set up as a puppet regime, you know, the kissers that I spoke about, the lackeys, has been obediently the servant of U.S. imperialist interest in Asia. But Guyana was bolder in its support than I've heard heretofore for the reunification of Korea. It carried an article, a commentary, quoting the president of Zambia, who has been greatly intimidated by the fact that USA flooded the world economy with copper at low price to bring the Zambian economy to its knees. Zambia has been negotiating IMF, International Monetary Fund assistance. However, today the president of Zambia, Zambia, called for a Pan-African unity force, but clearly and sharply disagreed with the USA and French imperialist policies. The president of Zambia said the Pan-African force of unity, a military presence made up of all of African nations, should not be in any way formed in a foreign capital, which was a direct reference, said the Voice of America, with some disdain, to the fact that USA's and Paris, the USA's plan and her NATO lackeys have been conducting meetings in Paris with some of the renegade puppets that are still left in Northwest Africa and Zaire to formulate a Pan-African so-called peacekeeping force with the one intent purpose to keep down liberation and remove the presence of Soviet and Cuban assistance in terms of military and economic advisors that are presently located in different regions of Africa. The Soviet Union has refused to make a trade-off for the dissidents, for USA businessmen who has been arrested and held presently in jail for violating their currency laws dealing in the white market of money. They've also refused to trade them for two alleged Soviet spies in the USA. The USA apparently has not responded to their request of the USSR to trade them for the Wilmington 10 and the Puerto Rican nationals, some of which have been held in jail on flimsy charges for 30 long years in USA prisons. There are some major summit differences in the important meeting of the heads of state, including President Carter, in Bonn, West Germany, the capitalist sector of Germany. They did not go into detail over what the economic differences are, over means of recovery from the terrible 1975 recession. It is thought that Japan is being adamant to giving up its surplus and also will not change its protectionist policies, which now Japan sells more than it buys, exports more, in other words, than it imports. The troubled area of Lebanon is calm to some degree, as Syria, a pro-Soviet ally, has been on war footing for days over the question of President Sarkis, who has said that he would resign unless the phalangist, right-wing, fascist Christian sector would withdraw from the conquered territory of southern Lebanon, occupied by Israeli forces forcefully and against the people's will. So this may indicate, though it has not been spelled out, all the reasoning that President Sarkis of Lebanon will not resign. It may mean that Israeli forces, the military regime, is open to certain concessions in South Lebanon. It was also required by President Sarkis that Israeli planes do no more low-flying, strafing, or bombing of the beautiful city of Beirut. Ethiopia accuses Somalia of acts of aggression on her border. Yesterday, Ethiopia was bombing Somalian cities. In retaliation, the Ethiopian black government, which is a Christian government, turned Marxist, stated that they would carry the war the next time to Somalia. This is, in essence, the major areas of news, with the exception of one statement in the Organization of African Unity that's meeting now, the 49 foreign ministers of the leading African nations, about the Pan-African Unity Force, in which you just heard earlier me tell of Zambia's utter denunciation of USA making any decisions about, or the French, about how they maintain the peace. Also, Zambia spoke that the Pan-African forces would in no way war against an African nation. They would not do so, but that they would war, in Zambia's mind, carry out war against the Union of South Africa and Rhodesia unless the white majority regimes allow the power to go to the people that it properly belongs to. As you know, in Rhodesia, over 70% of the population is black. counting other minorities, 75% nearly. Less than 15% white, giving you some idea of the disproportionate amount of power wielded by whites, while blacks have no representation and no freedom. In South Africa, it is very, very difficult also. Correct the statistics. I just gave you the statistics of South Africa. In Rhodesia, as you know, blacks outnumber whites 14 to 1, approximately, as I recall the statistics of last evening. The statistics I just gave were in reference to the apartheid concentration camp environment of the Union of South Africa, upheld by USA monopoly capitalism and her lackeys. Zambia took a brave stand in view of its economic difficulties, need for International Monetary Fund support to come against the Pan-African so-called peacekeeping plan of the USA and her lackey, NATO lackey, France. Also, to make the bold statement that as Zambia envisions a Pan-African peacekeeping force, which they prefer to call Pan-African Unity Force, it would pledge its solidarity, if necessary, to free the black people of South Africa and the African people and the Indian, who are kept under the misery of the white apartheid regime, and also free Rhodesia from the white rule, where they're outnumbered almost 10 to 1, and in Africa, 14 to 1. Anyway, we will give a little information due to the fact that Somalia, in this same Organization for African Unity meeting of the 49 foreign ministers of the leading African nations on the continent, this meeting is preparatory to a meeting next week of all of the heads of state. One resolution has been put on the floor. Doubtful that it has much chance of being passed. Somalia has made a demand that all Cuban forces be expelled from Africa. It is also called for the Cuban expulsion from the non-aligned nations, which are due to meet in the Belgrade Conference of non-aligned states. Somalia claims that Cuban presence in Somalia and Ethiopia, defending the Ethiopian government and people against the aggression of the Somalians, and the presence of Cubans in Angola that helped them have the government of their choice, Agostinho Neto, the Marxist government, that because of this, that Cuba is showing an alignment with the Soviet Union. Not necessarily follow that logic, of course. Cuba can be concerned about liberation and still be non-aligned. But Somalia is in the non-aligned conference, and Cuba has definitely taken the side of the Ethiopians, which it seems from all world opinion, even conservative governments, that the violators of the peace have been the Somalians in the Horn of Africa. Somalia, spelled sometimes S-O-M-A-L-I-A, or S-O-M-A-L-I, Republic, is located, as I said, in the Horn of Africa, the continent's easternmost point. North is the Gulf of Aden, A-D-E-N, and in that, formerly Aden, is now a People's Democratic Republic that is completely allied with the Soviet Union and entering, in a matter of days, the Comic-Con, the economic grouping of all communist nations that are allied with the Soviet Union. East and south is the Indian Ocean. West is Kenya, Ethiopia, and the French territory of the Afars, A-F-A-R-S, who still live under primitive colonialism of the French imperialists, who are a close ally of USA in NATO. And also the ISIS, I-S-S-S, I-S-S rather, A-S, another territory living under the bondage of French colonialism. How was Somalia created? Originally it was Italian Somaliland and British Somaliland under the colonialistic period. It joined together in 1960 to form the Somalia Republic. As capitalists in the Italian sector, capitalist nation, and British sector made the decision that Italian Somaliland and British Somaliland were to join to form the Somali Republic. Its frontiers, however, are artificial, and nomadic Somalis spread out to all neighboring countries. What is its size? 246,154 square miles, which, as you see, is three times the size of our beloved country of Guyana, and it's only slightly smaller than the state of Texas. Population is 3,200,000, but Somalia has a great deal of desert, and still it has a more dread ratio of population to its land area than Guyana. Four times as much population as Guyana, but it's only three times the size, with 3,200,000, and that has increased since these figures. It's closer now to 3,400,000, almost a 3.5 million population figure, with not nearly the fertile land that we have in our beautiful land of Guyana. Of that population breakdown, the Somalis, S-O-M-A-L-I, are 76%. The Sabs, S-A-B, which you'll have to go into your schools for some of the study of these tribes and ethnic groups, are 19%. The Bantu, the capital B-A-N-T-U, are 3.6%. The Arab, only 1.1%. Other are less than 0.3%. What is its religion? Predominantly Sunni, S-U-N-N-I, Muslim. Who rules? As a constitutional republic, so-called, Somalia has a one-house legislature, the National Assembly. Both constitution and assembly are presently suspended in a military right-wing rule. So the real rulers are the Supreme Council, which took power in 1969, dissolved the representative free legislature, and ruled in its place by decree, military dictatorship, through a strong man head. The regime is supposedly pledged domestically to erase the inefficiency, graft, and injustice of the past, but little has been done in that regard, whereas Ethiopia has made strides and gains in giving benefits to its people. Little has been achieved in Somalia. Also, it's pledged to expansionism, which is characteristic many times of nations who want the people's minds off of their own lack of freedoms, domestic perils, economic dearth, poverty. They've made a fierce concern, a central concern, is the annexation of Ogaden, which they claim as their territory, and which history, even the most right-wing regimes of Africa, claim is clearly in Ethiopian territory. The ancient Egyptians thought Somali was the land of Punt, P-U-N-T, or God's land. The ancients also thought it to be the home of myrrh, M-Y-R-R-H, and incense, like was supposedly given to the baby Jesus, and called it Regio, R-E-G-I-O, Aromatica, A-R-O-M-A-T-I-C-A. Perhaps the aromas attract locusts. For Somali was also considered to be the home of the locusts which plagued Egypt in the days before the Exodus. And again, they're having a plague of locusts, as you know, which are even affecting some of Somalia. 75% of the people graze herds totaling 1.5 million cattle, 2 million camels, 2,300,000 sheep, and 4,200,000 goats. The capital of Somalia is Mogadiscio, M-O-G-A-D-I-S-C-I-O. It's also spelled Mukdisha, M-U-K-D-I-S-H-A, or Mogadisho, M-A-G-A-D-I-S-H-O. Mogadishu, Mogadaxo, and Mogadishku. It is reputed to be the place Mussolini sent Italians he really wanted to be rid of that were giving him difficulty in his fascist regime. It was the end of the anus as far as Mussolini was concerned. Doesn't have the potential wealth and resource of Ethiopia. Being that there's much in the Soviet Union that is causing and attracting worldwide attention, we need some background of the Soviet Union, who for whatever reasons are on the right side of liberation causes in Angola, as they were in Mozambique, and recently, at least in backing, though denying any military presence, in Zaire. They have censored and stopped economic trade with Union of South Africa. They have no land, no businesses, no possessions in Africa. And the same, of course, cannot be said for USA or her imperialist lackeys in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Where is the location? Northern Eurasia, E-U-R-A-S-I-A, from the Baltic to the Pacific. To the west are Romania, an ally, though an ally that doesn't always follow policy. Romania has relations with Israel. Some say this is by plan, so that the Soviets can try to help those Israelis who really do not support Zionism and support the struggle of the laboring class amongst the population and socialism. It also has relations, Romania has, with China and conducts trade. The only satellite, as USA would call these nations, are ally of the Warsaw Pact, as the Soviet refers to their alliance, or Comecon, that has relations with China. Then, to the west also, is Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Finland, and Norway to the north, member of NATO, is the Arctic Ocean. And to the north directly, Norway really is to the west. To the north is the Arctic Ocean. To the east is the Pacific and its various North Asian seas. To the south are Korea, North Korea, the People's Democratic Republic of Korea, China, mainland, Nationalist Communist China, Mongolia, Afghanistan, that just recently became a firm ally in a military coup, a bloodless coup, that made them a firm ally militarily of USSR, the Soviet Union. Mongolia is also a republic, firm ally of the Soviet Union, made up of Chinese-appearing, Asiatic-appearing people. And Turkey, a very fascistic, reactionary regime, about one-fourth lies in Eastern Europe of this great nation of the Soviet Union, and three-fourths of it in Northern Asia. It's the only nation that encompasses both Europe and Asia. How was it created? Greater Russia grew up from the Duchies, D-U-C-H-I-E-S, around Moscow, the capital of the Soviet Union, and Kyiv, and pushed to the Volga. We have a movie on the Volga, remarkable river, and the Volga steppe, S-T-E-P-P-E, and the Caspian Sea. During the 16th century, under Ivan the Great, sometimes known as Ivan the Terrible, and his son, Siberia was gradually added during the 17th century. And in 1639, Russians reached the Pacific, and in 1689, fixed their boundaries with China at the Amur River, A-M-U-R. China has disputed those boundaries ever since. Peter the Great opened up a window onto the Baltic in the 18th century by his imperialism. Russia expanded into its present frontiers by annexing and by conquering the following nations, which are presently a part of the socialist republics within the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union have taken votes showing, however, that these nations are in the Soviet Union, Federation of 15 Republics, by vast majority consent. Nations are republics that now constitute the Soviet Union are. The Ukraine, 47 million, added mostly during the 18th century, part sliced from Poland after World War II by agreement with USA and her allies after the defeat of Axis Germany and her allies. Belorussia, B-E-L-O-R-U-S-S-I-A, 9 million, an 18th century addition in its imperialist or colonial period. Georgia, 4,700,000, an 18th century addition of its feudal imperialist period before the revolution, the great October 1917 revolution that introduced socialism. Lithuania, L-I-T-H-U-A-N-I-A, 3,300,000, 18th century conquest, part after World War II. Moldavia, U.S. capitalists always accuse Lithuania as being annexed against its will. It's always been historically a part of the Soviet Union. Moldavia, capital M-O-L-D-A-V-I-A, 3,700,000, part of Russia at various times throughout history. Kazakh, K-A-Z-A-K-H, 13 million by conquest of Nicholas I in the feudalistic imperialist period in the early 19th century. That would mean in the early 1800s. Kyrgyz, K-U-G-H-I-Z, 3,100,000, a 19th century addition in its feudalistic imperialist period. Tadzhik, T-A-D-Z-H-I-K, 3,100,000, 19th century addition under Nicholas I, the emperor. Armenia, A-R-M-E-N-I-A, 2,700,000, finally subdued in the mid-19th century. Azerbaijan, A-Z-E-R-B-A-I-J-A-N, 5,300,000, 19th century imperialist addition. Uzbek, over 12 million, U-Z-B-E-K. Alexander II added it in the 19th century. Turkmen, 2.5 million, late 19th century addition under Alexander III. Latvia, 2,600,000, handed to Russia by Adolf Hitler in the German-Soviet non-aggression pact, retained after the war, although USA propaganda newspapers do not say so, that it was given to them by Adolf Hitler. The Latvians were also very strongly fascist, so Hitler betrayed his own fascist ally in the temporary agreement he had to reach with the Soviet Union, because he, as a capitalist, had betrayed the capitalist Churchill of England and USA, who had put him in power. Like Rockefeller, were even making money on both sides of the war, while U.S. boys, all the people of Europe, were killed and ravaged and gassed, tortured and murdered in concentration camps. Rockefeller continued to do so with his interest, make money on both sides of the war till its completion. Though he died just last week in an automobile accident, his lone remaining brother still lives off of that wealth of blood lost on both sides of a war. Horrendous. Those are the true criminals. Estonia, Estonia, 1,400,000. Another non-aggression pact casualty through Peter the Great, though Peter the Great had controlled it earlier, and it was rightfully, if you're going to take old territorial lines, which have been agreed by all nations of the world, a part of the Soviet Union to begin with. Size of the Soviet Union, 8,650,000 square miles. Now Guyana, our beautiful country, is 83,000 square miles. Think what you got there. You've got over 100 times, well over 100 times the size of Guyana in the Soviet Union. Area-wide, Russia, or the USSR, United Soviet Socialist Republics, is the world's largest country, covering 1/6 of the land surface of the world. That is something else. 40% of the oil, not to mention all other kinds of mineral resources. Population is now about 260 million. Russian ethnic group forms about 50% of that. Ukrainian are 16.9%. Uzbek, 4%. Belarusian, 4%. Kazakh, 2%. Azerbaijanian, 2%. Armenian, 1.5%. The only place where Armenians were not slaughtered in the mass genocide that occurred in Turkey, where 2 million Armenians were murdered, like the Jews in Germany. Georgian, 1.4%. Moldavian, 1.2%. Lithuanian, 1.2%. 160 other ethnic groups, including all races of the world, both black, white, yellow, red, include 12.8% of the entire population. Contrary to the myth that there are no people of color, there are several hundreds of thousands, according to even a capitalistic rendition of Soviet Union and its geography. Most people belong to no organized religion, but there are 13% Russian Orthodox, 13% Muslim. Religion has been stamped out more effectively than any other nation in the world. 12% Roman Catholic, 1% over Jewish, 0.8% Russian Baptist Union, and a small amount of Pentecostalists and Jehovah's Witnesses. Religious freedom is guaranteed as long as it's not used as an instrument to try to overthrow the representative government of the Soviet people. Who rules? The USSR federal constitution provides for legislative and executive branches. One house of the legislature, our Supreme Soviet, is composed of representatives elected from 15 union republics, 25 from each, the 20 autonomous republics, 11 each, the 8 autonomous regions, 5 each, and the 10 national districts, 1 each. These deputies, running on either the Communist Party ticket or as a non-party member, contrary to what capitalist propaganda admits, people can run as a non-party member, comprise the Council Soviet of Nationalities. All representatives of the people must have a socialist philosophy, however. The second house, the Council of the Union, is composed of one deputy for each 300,000 of the population. Both houses usually meet twice per year during the four-year term. This 37-member presidium is chosen by the Supreme Soviet from among its members. The chairman is the titular head of state, or president, which is actually now government by Troika, 3. The Council of Ministers, which include the premier and his deputies, is also appointed by the Supreme Soviet. Its chairman is the premier. Who really rules? The Communist Party, it is said, by capitalism, whose membership is controlled through a strict Marxist-Leninist indoctrination program that admits only a carefully chosen few people who live by the disciplines of Marxist-Leninism, according to the Soviets. Party membership, a necessity for political advancement of any degree, according to capitalist commentaries, is belied by the statement I've given earlier that you can be and are many deputies who are not a member of the Communist Party. About 9% of the total population belong to the Communist Party. The party elects the Central Committee, which in turn names the Politburo, capital P-O-L-I-T-B-U-R-O, members who determine USSR policy, or Russian-Soviet policy. The committee also elects the secretariat, or executive body. The first secretary, or chairman, of the Central Committee is the USSR's political leader, overseeing the corporate manager types who maintain the government on the local regions, and in the cooperatives, and in all of the government-owned factories and mills, because all of the means of production and means of distribution are held by the government, which the Soviets declare is representative of all the people. At times, the party secretary has also been the premier, for example, Nikita Khrushchev. But whether or not he heads the government, the head of the party is in control of the USSR, according to most world opinion. Despite government claims to the contrary, the Soviet Union has class distinctions, the capitalists declare. How the Soviet citizen lives today is determined by his position in a three-tier hierarchy, according to capitalists. Again, there's a privileged upper class who are the communists, so-called. Although this has not been borne out by Muhammad Ali, who just came, where he said all people were equal. There was no differences between people based on their job or income or their race or their religion. The urban, the educated middle class, and the public blue-collar farmer class. In a society without any private property or inherited private wealth, and without great income disparities, there could really not be much of an argument for this basis of class that the capitalist says exists in the power and status of Soviet citizenry. Even the capitalists admit that there is no real disparity in the basis of income or wealth. So what do people have to prove their so-called distinction of class, as USA and her lackeys declare is the case? The upper class, so the capitalists say, is 600,000 power elite communist, one-third of which are party members. That's strange. How could there be only one-third party members and be in the same class? Who run the government and society? Now, this is capitalist propaganda I'm giving you. Its nucleus is the Politburo, P-O-L-I-T-B-U-R-O, secretariat, surrounded by several hundred thousand technical people, engineers, and lawyers, who are not lawyers in the classic sense as we know it, who are experts in law. Most of the legal problems in the Soviet Union are decided by councils in the community, though it doesn't have the kind of domestic, actual communal lifestyle desired as the Chinese have. Of course, we know the difference in its foreign policy. By example, the Chinese have been on the wrong side of the Ethiopian question, and obviously and most decidedly on the wrong side of the Angolan question, where they supported the same regime that the CIA, USA, supported, and the same, pitifully so, in Zaire. Most of these people in the so-called upper class that the capitalists charge that they have come from peasant origins and have less education than the recently graduated specialist. A contradiction. Yet they're all supposed to be, this is a capitalist phrase, in the same power elite. Now the mid-class, these are the specialists. Okay, I'm giving you capitalist propaganda now. And professionals required to run a modern urban society at the behest of the power elite. How could you have a power elite comprised of both professionals, specialists, and peasants? And this is the capitalist rundown. I believe you ought to see both sides, but you ought to look at it critically. Now the middle class, so-called. Even the capitalists don't go so far as to call it middle class, they call it mid-class. These are the specialists and professionals required to run a modern urban society at the behest of the power elite, as the capitalists would say, or the Communist Party, representatives of the people, as the Soviets would say. Most of these 2 million are university or technical school graduates, and their numbers are growing daily, as education is guaranteed by the government to all the citizenry of the Soviet Union.